and that by treating aging, we can create and expedite cures more quickly and more safely and effectively for children, I was really excited, and that was really the precipice of starting BioViva, was to see if we could combat the biggest killer in the world, which is biological aging. So, I mean, this is a really good time to have your genome analyzed, to look at your disease risk, because it's the first time in the world that we're starting to have actual treatments to address those conditions. Ethically, bioethically, doctors generally let their patients die without giving them access to experimental medicine because they're concerned about being sued or liable for some outcome. But I think that letting people die is the worst outcome, and actually we should change our thinking on that. And if you let somebody die without giving them access to a technology that might help them, I think that that should be more criminal than not.
Finally, I am able to offer Bill Andrews' amazing new anti-aging dietary supplement with TAM. I have been wanting this since I learned about its discovery approximately 4 years ago. At that time, it was not available as an oral supplement, but now, Define Time with TAM is here. This amazing product counteracts and suppresses the fundamental cause of aging, telomere shortening. TAM improves biological health in skin, vessels, brain, and bone. Specifically, it works to lengthen telomeres in cells, leading to younger and healthier cells. Currently, Define Time with TAM is the most effective anti-aging compound available in the world today. Listeners will receive a 5% discount using code SARAH5. Be sure to use this every time you buy. It will also work in conjunction with other offers. See additional research and learn more with the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This episode, I have Liz Parrish coming to the show. She's the CEO of BioViva, and she's patient zero of dealing with the gene therapies that her company does research on. And I had her on a couple years ago, and since then, there's been a ton of development in the anti-aging field. And I love having her on because she is so well-spoken. She's just brilliant. So I think there's a lot you'll get out of this. But one of the most exciting things, I didn't know this until in the middle of the interview, and I kind of had to screech the brakes on and talk to her about this, which you'll hear, is that she has a trial going on for Alzheimer's where she has 10 free slots, which she has about five left right now. There is no solution for Alzheimer's right now, and they are thinking this could be a solution. And so she has 5 open slots, which will not cost you anything for the actual procedures. You will have to do some things around, like pay for your flights there and pay for some local blood work and things. But the cost is dramatically reduced, and it can be affordable for most people. And so if there's one thing that'll make me feel really good with all the stuff I'm covering, all the hard things that I cover on this channel, which people know about, if we could get 5 Alzheimer's patients with a lot of promise that could go in there and get covered on this procedure, and it comes from this show, that would be a gift to me, that I know that this show is doing some good for some people. So get the word out, and please, I would like to get her 5 people with Alzheimer's that would like to be part of this trial, and you can learn more about it. I have the link below. And then for my patrons, she's going to stick around and talk about how she's patient zero and how those treatments have showed in her own results, and you know, the additional muscles that she has and how it's actually working, and give us kind of an analysis. And these things are so expensive, and we talk about it in this interview as well, as how having more and how to scale it up. And one of her goals is really to bring the price down on this. She's very passionate about that because she knows that at these prices, people can't afford it. And that's why they're doing this Alzheimer's thing. And they have donors that are paying for it. And if it goes well, they're looking to get more donors and really have a track record on how to solve this, because there is no cure for Alzheimer's. It's a terrible, evil disease for people. It's not a way to live out the rest of your life. So please help me. Please help the show get these five people that we need. And again, the link is below. And let's get into this amazing interview conversation with Liz Parrish. Liz, thank you so much for rejoining the program.
I'm happy to be here, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, your company is just rocking and rolling, and you're working on anti-aging and doing all this gene therapy and all these things. And everyone's talking about you. You're in all these magazines and giving talks all over the place, TED Talks and things. What, the last time we talked, you had a model for anti-aging. And, you know, you have 10 areas, and I'll put a picture up here. What has changed, do you think, in the last couple years since we last talked in the model from what your perspective? I mean, where are the advances and what maybe some of the framework ideas has changed?
Yeah, so when we're looking at the 10 hallmarks of aging, we're looking at what drives the process of aging and actually other diseases as well. So remember, the reason I got involved in BioViva to begin with was to cure childhood disease. When I got turned on to this idea that aging, in fact, was a disease, which I believe, and that by treating aging, we can create and expedite cures more quickly and more safely and effectively for children, I was really excited. And that was really the precipice of starting BioViva, was to see if we could combat the biggest killer in the world, which is biological aging. It's the number one killer in all the industrialized countries, and it'll be the number one killer in every country by 2050. By tackling the diseases of aging, which people do want to live longer and healthier, and it's good for the economy, and it's good for interpersonal relationships and the environment, as it shows, the longer we live, the better things we do. We could do that and actually affect childhood disease significantly, and maybe even wipe it out from the information that we learn from these therapies. And by dual purposing some of these therapies for childhood disease, I was just 100% go. So what we did is we tried to find what is actually happening at the cellular level. And a really important paper came out years ago. Maria Blasco, who is big in the telomere sciences, was one of the authors. And it was the 9 hallmarks of aging. Since then, we've added one more hallmark to it. And essentially what this is what is happening at the cellular level. So what is driving aging? Is aging just this natural phenomena that happens to you over time and you suddenly become old? No, it's these processes that are happening at the cellular level. And because of these processes, things like inflammation and autoimmune disorders and cancer and dementia and type 2 diabetes happen. And in some cases, they happen in young children, things like progeria, which is accelerated aging, and various other diseases. So this is where we started with the hallmarks of aging, and we started looking at the implications of the hallmarks of aging in the various aging diseases. And just this year, I put out a really good graph on social media that I can share with you, that you can share with your followers here, that shows you where, in fact, these hallmarks of aging overlap in the diseases of aging. But a long story short, if we look at the 10 hallmarks of aging, let's say a whole bunch of those hallmarks of aging are happening in the biggest 4 killers on the planet, which are cardiovascular disease, dementia, type 2 diabetes, and cancer. And the accumulation of those hallmarks in those cells is what is vastly driving disease. But what has changed since we talked? So science is moving rather quickly. One of the hallmarks of aging is senescent cells. And these are cells that the telomeres get short. They don't divide anymore. They send off inflammatory markers to the cells around them. And right now there's about 3 companies that are looking at senescent cell killing therapeutics. And at least one of those is in gene therapy. So that's really exciting. There's also another candidate for mitochondrial dysfunction, which is prevalent across all the diseases of aging and happens in children as well in some diseases. And we now have our sights on a gene therapy for that. So when we first talked, we mostly were looking at, my company was mostly looking at telomere lengthening and myostatin inhibitors, which are gene therapies that make you stronger. Telomere lengthening gene therapies lengthen the ends of the caps of the chromosomes, which give you more healthy cell divisions. But now we have two more candidates, and one of them is specifically for mitochondrial dysfunction. It's called PGC1-alpha. And we have another candidate that's called Clotho, and it is definitely implicated in, if you upregulate it, you get longer, healthier lives in animals and actually better memory. So it's good for memory loss potentially. And if you downregulate it, you shorten the lives of animals. And so we're hoping to use that gene therapy for chronic kidney disease, cardiovascular disease, and dementia. So this is pretty exciting.
Well, about 2 years ago, the FDA put out approved three different protocols for doing gene therapy. Are these what you're talking about now?
Well, actually, so as far as the approved gene therapies go, there's five approved gene therapies now, and that means they have gotten all the way through regulations, and those are different. So when we're looking at gene therapy, BioViva uses what's called a partnership company who does medical tourism. So we give access to patients who want access to technologies that they need now by consensual use. As far as that goes, what we do with that data, so BioViva is a bioinformatics company. So we look at that data and we try to see where the performance is in these therapeutics. So by seeing where the performance is, we can actually know where and to run these drugs, what endpoints that they're going to target, and when to get them into the regulatory system as soon as we understand where they work and how well they work. And I really love our system because it's kind of a pyramid of care. It gives people access to technologies that they wouldn't have access to otherwise. And you know that over 100,000 people die of biological aging today without this access. It gives investors understanding where the technology works in the body so that the companies can raise the crucial funds that are actually required to get through the regulatory bodies. And it helps biotech industry actually design their drugs better for the endpoints that they'll meet. And actually, since the last time we talked, we've gotten so excited about this technology that we started research and development at Rutgers University for a new delivery method for gene therapy so that we can get multiple genes in at one time. So when we look at the hallmarks of aging, going back to that, if we're looking at something like telomere attrition, well, we can lengthen your telomeres. And actually that has a beneficial effect for your mitochondria and cellular communication. But we know that it's going to be more than one gene to treat biological aging. So our new delivery method is being designed to deliver multiple genes instead of just one. So if that kind of also shows you where we're stepping into, we're stepping into a multiple gene delivery system rather than a single gene delivery system in order to actually really affect biological aging. So like here we are, we're kind of stepping up two staircases and answering two orders of operation at the same time.
Oh, that's incredible. So one thing that we talked about a few years ago is the problems of things not being available here. And so when you're saying that you talk about medical tourism, are you also looking across the world and saying, okay, we have these options here, these countries have these options, and yeah, we want to fast track it, these things in this country, or try to do our best to get it approved here, but since we don't, maybe you go here for this, and then come here for this. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, it's okay to go to it's okay to go to different locations in order to get patient data. So they're called studies, and patients do them by consensual use. They have to understand the technology and what they're participating in and sign off that they understand that it's experimental technology. And this is not uncommon to use this type of route in order to get your early data to understand better how a drug will perform in clinical trials. So remember, like, clinical trials are fraught with problems. They have a 94% failure rate just in phase three. So if you just look at phase three itself, you're looking at a really high percentage failure rate. But we would like to flip that on its head and have a 94% success rate through phase three and actually get there. And this early patient data gives us the ability to get that important data that will actually expedite therapeutics to the world. So you had asked me about the five approved gene therapies, and those are really exciting. They're not all in the United States. Some of them are in the EU, but the first gene therapy that ever passed for use actually was pulled from the market because it was too expensive, and it's a protein deficiency was what it was actually treating, and it was called lipoprotein lipase deficiency, and it came in at over $1 million. It was reduced to $1 million, and still the market was too small and people couldn't afford it. But since then, there has been one gene therapy passed in the U.S. for congenital blindness, and that's fantastic. There's also been a severe combined immune deficiency gene therapy passed in the EU. I think that was passed when we last talked, and that's for a disease. If you break it down into its acronym, it's called SCID, and it's essentially boy in the bubble disease. So that disease has been cured, and it comes in at over $500,000. And then recently there's been a gene therapy passed for beta thalassemia, which is really exciting. It's about $2 million. And the last one, the one that got most notice, was for spinal muscular atrophy. And that's for kids. And unfortunately, they can die within about 6 weeks if they don't get the therapy. And that came in at a ringing whopping $2 to $5 million. And, you know, I think we can do a lot better than that on prices. These are all a one-time treatment to a cure, but I don't think that we should be charging this much for these type of therapeutics. And how you break that mold is you start treating people by scale, and treating biological aging is the biggest scale that we have. We can definitely get the prices down and even make it so these monogenic diseases, these diseases that we've seen therapeutics come through for, monogenic meaning it's a single gene mutation error, so they're just replacing one gene. We could actually also drive the cost down on these significantly just by buffering the area of gene therapy with treating the number one killer. So that's why we're looking at scale. That's why we're looking at a bigger pool of clients.
Well, and as we get better at it, couldn't you reuse and, as different therapies intersect with each other, you can reduce costs just because there's similarities between a lot of different therapies, and then you can change just what differs between the therapies? I mean, as we get better with gene therapy overall.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, you can use, you know, doctors can actually prescribe it for what might be considered an off-label use. So in that case, what we would see is, for instance, this is how we are multipurposing a gene therapy that's already gone through safety and efficacy through our partner clinic. We use a gene called follistatin. It was initially developed to treat children with muscular dystrophy, and now it's being used to treat sarcopenia, which is muscle loss with biological aging. So we can also reverse switch that and test out a gene therapy on, you know, biological aging and potentially cure childhood disease with it. And that's my hope, is to have that two-way street in every condition, so that, you know, we're helping kids get well and curing their diseases, and then not just having them have a couple decades of health before they start slipping into the diseases of aging.
You know, the last time I talked to Bill Andrews, he has a telomere lengthening procedure, gene therapy, that can lengthen it by 100%. Now, it's very expensive, $2 million or something, and they're using it for Alzheimer's, very close to being able to the point where we can really deal with telomeres. What are you seeing, and how do you think that's going to affect? I mean, his advancements aren't the only ones that are coming onto the market, but, or that are not to the market, but to science. What do you see as how that's going to affect aging overall, because telomere lengthening helps all areas, right? I mean, it's not the only thing that's going to help, but what do you see as the promising effects of that?
It hits several of the hallmarks of aging, so we're really excited about that. Our partner clinics are doing that as well. And Alzheimer's, right now we actually have 10, well, we actually have less than that. We did have 10 free spots for patients to participate in an Alzheimer's treatment for free. They're responsible, of course, for travel and their pre and post work, blood work and images. But I think that it's really exciting, and we were really happy to get funding for that therapeutic because we're also using the gene therapy. I hope that Bill has lots of success with his trial, because the more success he has, the more companies will pop up giving this type of a therapy. And in this case, competition is good, especially if it works and you can show evidence that it works. So we're doing a similar thing, that we're also collecting the data and seeing how these technologies work. And, you know, we're just really happy about that. What we're doing is we're...
Can I ask you, can you stop for a second? Do you have any more spots mm-hmm. open?
Yeah, absolutely we do.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah,
so
we
if somebody's
we have about
out,
five more spots.
Someone out there, you have five more spots for somebody who has Alzheimer's, and because there's no treatment for it. So as long as they have the funding to make the trips back and forth, it's paid for?
Yeah, the treatment itself is paid for. And so, yeah, okay. It's fantastic. It's for mild to medium level Alzheimer's. Yeah, we got funded by a nonprofit. We're really proud of that. We try to get funding from wherever we can. When nonprofits will come forward and help us, we're 100% for it. If we could get some big donations, bring it in. We'll show you everywhere your money's going to go. We'd like to start testing other gene therapies for patients for without having to charge them for it. You know, that would be a very amazing. Yeah,
I'm
but right now we
sure.
have that for all. So
well, I'm going to make sure people know five people at least. Now, how what are the criteria? Do you have to have a certain? You just as long as you're at the beginning or mid. Process?
Yeah, you need a diagnosis. Generally, people already have a diagnosis, and they do need to have one brain imaging, and generally you do if you have a diagnosis. And then after the therapy, you'll have a bunch of blood work that, you know, you'll need to make sure that you get. And then we do another imaging again on your brain. And so there may be cost associated to the patients for that. We try to help them find the lowest cost imaging and blood draw centers. And bring us your sick. In that case,
incredible.
You know, we really have something to offer even people who don't have a lot of cash.
If you end up getting more than five people, are you thinking that possibly you could get more funding to be able to do more than five?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, the trial is open for 10. We have a couple of people who have gone through it already, and we're waiting for their results. We have some people who have signed up, and the doctors are seeing if they actually meet the criteria. And so there's at least five spaces available right now. I mean, we're super excited about this.
Well, that I am too. I'm like, okay, I got sidetracked here with you telling me there's five spaces for people and they don't have to pay for it other than the exterior costs. And so you've really contained the cost for them. I'm sure there are a lot of candidates out there. Well, thank you so much for doing that. I'll make sure I talk about it in the intro as well.
No, thank you for... Yeah, thank you for reminding me about that, because I didn't actually have it as one of the topics that we would be talking about. So yeah, thank you for the enthusiasm, because absolutely, I mean, we're very enthusiastic too, and we were so delighted to get the funding to actually do that. And, you know, if anyone's out there who wants to fund more trials, you know, please look us up.
Well, the thing is with that is there isn't a treatment, and people are desperate, and they're watching their loved ones disappear. And so I'm just so happy you have this going on. That's so awesome. And I cut you off and you were starting to talk about something, and we had to talk about this. So if you can remember what you were talking about
before. No, that's totally. No, please. Let's just move on. I have no idea, but I'm glad that you brought it up because I wasn't
Don't
even
either.
considering it.
I
I
don't even
didn't
know what
have
I'm
it
going to
on
talk
my
about
list of
either.
things I should talk about.
I just got so excited about that that I got okay. So I was talking about the telomere lengthening and how that was going to have an effect on everything else. And that, I mean, to me, that's so promising that we have one thing that is possible, one domino, because you can't cure aging diseases if your telomeres are going to wipe you out, right? So we have one thing that's starting to be promising. And I know we have a lot of others, but I also want to talk to you about inflammation and antioxidant. We have C60, which is coming out as being a super antioxidant, dealing with helping immunities and inflammation. It's not anything more than building up your immunity and inflammation. It might be more, I mean, but that's pretty much the core of it. How are you seeing those kinds of things helping with the anti-aging?
Well, I mean, we're not really looking at many of the as far as running in trials, we're only looking at the gene therapies specifically. So there are different things, different interventions you can do. Like, metformin has been implicated in reducing inflammation and slowing growth pathways. But in fact, some of the growth pathways are pretty important to regeneration. So there are different mechanisms of affecting biological aging, but we're specifically looking at gene therapy because we specifically want to go in and fix what the problem is. And then perhaps maybe some of these things that people want to take in their own time and in their private lives will just further benefit the gene therapies. But I'm not a professional in any of those areas, so I can't actually I don't have much insight on that. I know that I've seen some of the mouse studies, or at least one of the mouse studies on the C60, but then I found that it seemed to be hard to reproduce again, and so I'm uncertain of the certain benefits there. But if there are, then hopefully mixed with gene therapies will be the best outcome for patients.
Yeah, multiple different facets to get at all the different areas of the aging. Now, one thing that you talk about in your website is genome sequencing. And why is that something that you think is relevant? And first of all, is it private? Because everybody's scared about that. They don't want anybody else having their information. Yeah.
Oh, yes. So you'll be happy to hear that in November, we're actually launching that's November 2019. So if you watch this at some other year, some other time, it won't be as relevant. Hopefully we've been a big success if it's in a year or two. But we're launching a multi-omic repository where people can put their multi-omic data into one repository. And security is the number one thing that we are accomplishing with this, and it's the number one concern. So it's HIPAA compliant, it's GDPR compliant, it's going to be powered by Google. It's been actually written and encrypted by a professional company who does this for large companies. It's cost us a lot of money to make sure that we do it right, and we are really excited about that. So the security of your data is number one, and that is the number one thing that we targeted in building this repository. The second thing that we targeted was ease of use for customers. And so when you look at your genome or your microbiome or your metabolome or your blood work, we want you to get that all in one place and help us cure biological aging and, bring these treatments to people. And that's one way that you can do it. It's really crucial to know all of those building blocks of who you are because they are directly associated with your health risks and your percentage chance of actually coming down with a specific disease.
Let me ask you, because the information is so important, and this isn't something you're going to want to hear, but Google and the University of Chicago is in a lawsuit for disclosing the most medical records in history. They've been caught doing that. How are you going to keep Google from doing anything? Are they just doing the back end hardware or what? Because you don't want Google touching any of your data.
Yeah, they're just doing the storage system, and they do not have anything to do with our encryption and our security on our side. Yeah, and probably the only good thing about bad news like that is that those companies then have to screw down as hard as they can and make sure that they've got no leaking ends. It's really deplorable when human data is exposed like that, and various people get a hold of it that shouldn't get a hold of it. I just, all I can say is it's probably like eating at a restaurant after somebody's gotten food poisoning. Hopefully it will be the safest and securest cloud system, but we have encryption on our side, and that's why we're building our whole system on our side to ensure that our patients' data is safe.
If they are only doing this data storage and you're doing the encryption and you're in control of that, then they probably can't touch it. It should be pretty
Yeah.
safe. Yeah, and especially
Yeah,
too,
exactly. So that.
if you do some extra security on keeping it away from the network, so it's not an open network kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, the security of the data comes first. I mean, there has never been a time that people have been so concerned about their data since money. When we started putting money in banks, we became very concerned of how secure that bank was, and now we're sort of bank vaulting our human data, and people don't want that shared. I think that over time, people will see how much more ubiquitous the data is than they think that it is now. I mean, I think a lot of people feel like it's really looking into something really special and personal about you. And in a sense, it is. And we want people to learn about that. But in another sense, right now, we know how people will die. So even if your insurance company sees your genomic data, I mean, you're probably in standard line with 90% of the population. You'll die of dementia, heart disease, or cancer. But we don't want to be flippant about that data. That data is really important. But one of the reasons we're putting together this repository is to look at what we think is the most valuable data on the planet, and that's how our patients are performing under regenerative gene therapies. So by today's standard, that data is immensely important, and we want to use the regular normal cohort of individuals and their omic data, their multi-omic data, and see how it actually matches with the patients who take regenerative gene therapies, therefore expediting therapeutic cures. So, I mean, this is a really good time to have your genome analyzed to look at your disease risk because it's the first time in the world that we're starting to have actual treatments to address those conditions. And without people sharing data, we have less knowledge on what to address, and it just makes the whole process take longer, to actually sort out a cure.
Well, let's talk about the ethics. So we're starting to get into that. You have a whole section on your website talking about the ethics because people are concerned about only the wealthy are going to be able to live longer, or what happens when we have a whole bunch of people that live longer. Can you talk a little bit? And I'm sure you've thought about this a lot, and people ask you. I mean, you have a whole section dedicated to it, so I'm sure it's something that comes up a lot. Can you address some of the big issues around ethics?
Well, there are a lot of different issues around ethics, and probably the lowest hanging fruit of ethics is whether patients should participate in experimental medicine. And over 100,000 people die every day given no option of drugs to participate in. And so we think definitely yes. Ethically, bioethically, doctors generally let their patients die without giving them access to experimental medicine because they're concerned about being sued or liable for some outcome. But I think that letting people die is the worst outcome. And actually, we should change our thinking on that. And if you let somebody die without giving them access to a technology that might help them, I think that that should be more criminal than
Yes,
not.
absolutely.
Then we can look at the ethics of lifespan, and we can say that historically, one thing that we do know is lifespan increases. People have fewer children, therefore, we seem to populate more slowly in every country. That is a really good indication that we can extend lifespan and not have this bursting amount of humans on the planet. Also, technology changes really quickly. And so, you know, we really want to push technology. And if there were half the people on the planet, we wouldn't be pushing for the type of technology we're pushing for now. So I think that people do good things when they're put to the case of trying to solve a problem. We're trying to figure out how to get clean water, clean the environment. You know, all of these movements, even though we've done terrible things against the environment, all of the movements and, you know, these children that are going on to TV saying, oh, please fix my environment for me, that's all a product of lifespan. That's living long enough to understand the damage that you're doing, living long enough to start understanding some of the things that you can do to change that damage. And that's our children being smart enough and knowing that they'll live long enough to see the implications of that and demanding a change. Those are all really good signs. Now it's just getting big corporations to make those changes.
I was going to say, I thought about the ethics issues. I taught an ethics class in college, and we talked about this. I think we're the first ones in the country, probably the world, that did an ethics course at the university level on aging. And in thinking about it, there's only, from a mathematical standpoint, there's only a few generations that you have to deal with the explosion of population. So it's not like it's forever, because once it stabilizes, right? Unless you live forever, then you have a problem. But if you have a cutoff age, it's only, the mathematics is only for a certain amount of time, and then it stabilizes again. But the other thing that you were bringing up was the point of, as you get older, you start to contribute more to society. And I think as you get older, it takes a while before you start understanding these more complex ideas and being able to then put action plans in place. And you have such a small amount of time by the time you're capable of doing that before you die. And think about what we can accomplish if we just had another couple decades. Because I don't know anybody that starts thinking about some of these complex issues until they're older. You know, you don't in your 20s, and especially while you just don't. And I didn't think about some of these things until I was in my 40s. And other people might take a long, I think I had a speed test going on because I've been doing these interviews, so I've really been going at a faster pace. But it takes, you have to grow up a little. You have to mature and grow up and deal with stuff before you're even able to start solving some of these problems. So anyway, so that's my two cents on the ethics. And you were going to say something else if I cut you off.
Oh, that was because I was trying to hold in my head all of the things that you had asked me about on ethics. And I think that one of the things that you had talked about was, will the rich be the only people that afford this type of technology? And I would have to say, no, of course not. So the people who can afford this type of technology today, it is very expensive. It's like building a supercomputer today. They're really pioneering medicine for the future. And, you know, one of the things that we saw in the wealthy for a while was this sort of decline in giving back to society. So years ago, before I was born, if a family was rich, they bought land and they dedicated it to a park and they had it fixed up for people, and that was their contribution back. And this type of technology gives them the ability to contribute again. Since it's very expensive, unless we have a paid for trial, it gives people the ability to step forward and pioneer new technology for the world. And I think that that's really great. But as it goes, those type of people will also want to benefit from bringing those technologies to the world. So faster than ever today, we see the translation of technology that would only be for the rich, like the first supercomputer and the first, you know, laptop computers, you know, and things like that, and cell phones. Remember, very few people had those, to the world trying to proliferate them out to the most amount of people. Besides, everyone benefits from the society not being sick, and the rich will not benefit from a very sick, aging society. If they live a long time, they'll be paying a lot towards those illnesses. No, I don't think that will happen. I think it's just a matter of scale. It's a matter of our companies getting enough patients. I mean, even today, if we had 1,000 patients this year instead of 100, we would have a much more affordable therapy that most people, at least in the Western world, could afford. And then we could get it even lower with tens of thousands of people.
Well, that's so excellent. You're such a great futurist. You communicate so well. And I thank you so much for coming on my program. Can you tell us where people can reach you and get more information on what you're doing and if you have any upcoming events or anything?
Yeah, so in November of 2019, this year, we'll have a new website up for bioviva-science.com. So you can find us there even right now. We just have our old website, bioviva-science.com. If you're interested in therapeutics, you need to go to our partner company, and that's integrated-health-systems.com. And you can get a consultation there to talk to a doctor if you have somebody in need, or you want to come through to that Alzheimer's trial. That would be fantastic.
Can they find those links on your, from BioViva?
They can find them at bioviva-science.com. You can even look up BioViva, B-I-O-V-I-V-A, gene therapy. You can do a search and it'll be the first thing. It should be the first thing that comes up.
It is. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm so excited about the Alzheimer's. I'm definitely going to tell people about it. Will you stick after for maybe a short little segment for my Patreon?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah,
I enjoyed being on.